Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, my Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. It is Kaumba, creativity. And so tonight we're going to talk a little bit about creativity, but also we're going to talk about, well, quite a few things, actually. So what does 2023 look like for you? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that and a few other things. We just came from a Kwanzaa celebration or observance, MWM and Men of Valor and the Kwanzaa Associates and New World Order. We did a Kwanzaa program here in Philly, and it was very interesting. The folks that came enjoyed it, and we did what we needed to do, which was to make sure that we build what it is that we have been working on over the past couple of years, and that is the Global AFCOM Village. Yep, that's what we've been talking about, the Global AFCOM Village. Now, the Global AFCOM Village is actually an extension of MWM, and so you're going to hear us talk more about it as we proceed. But before we go into tonight's program, I wanted to, again, send my condolences out to the Jamal family. For those who do not know, of course, Mumia Abu-Jamal's wife made transition. The Janaza Going Home Services was yesterday. And I thank Brother Shabaka for forwarding me the some of the photos from the activity. I was not able to make the Janaza, but certainly, you know, our prayers and the spirit of our sister is certainly with us. I did talk to Sister Pam a little while ago. She went up to see Mumia today. And, of course, you know, he's just, wow, what can I say? He's very, very saddened by, you know, this whole situation. You know, it's really kind of interesting because many felt that, you know, he's so close to being home, to coming home. And unfortunately, you know, with Sister Wadia making transition, it just, you know, it's a bittersweet kind of situation. But at any rate, family, you know, again, our condolences to the Jamal family. And certainly we're going to keep our brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal, in our prayers. For those who do not know, again, I want to remind you that we have 60 to 90 days. And so one of the things that we're getting ready to launch is the letter campaign. We're focusing on youth and students right now, but certainly any adults that would like to participate, we're going to give you some information about that shortly as well. But we want to start sending letters to the judge. When I talked to Sister Pam earlier today, she, you know, made it very clear that Mumia should have been home right now. You know, he should have been home and at least, you know, been able to spend, you know, time with his wife. She had been ill, but again, I didn't realize that, you know, she was apparently, you know, as ill as she was, but nevertheless, you know, folks are really angry with this judge because she could have made a ruling and Mumia really could have been home. But that's a whole nother conversation, a whole nother, you know, situation. But the point is we have to continue to make sure that we, you know, do everything we can to get him out now. I mean, certainly he has to come home. It's just no question about it. At any rate, family, again, Habori Gani, and, of course, the response is Kaumba. And, of course, we are talking about creativity. Before we go into tonight's program, and very shortly, we're going to be talking with Brother Herschel Daniels. Herschel Daniels has been working over these past years on a project that has been developing and is really, really looking good. I'm very thankful that he has kept us in the loop because, you know, there's so many who do various things, and for whatever reason,
find no reason to kind of include us, which is fine. But again, there are a few groups who, you know, continue to send us information. And again, we are very thankful for that, Brother Shep being another one. And again, Brother Herschel Daniels being one as well. So we're going to talk with him in regards to, you know, many don't really know that in a couple of years, we will be closing out the international decade for African people. You know, why on the grassroots level in particular? And I'm saying that in terms of, you know, groups and organizations that do things in our communities, why most of them are not, you know, made privy to this kind of information. And we can't say that, well, you know, because they're on the grassroots level, they're only doing stuff in the community. That's not true. I know several grassroots folk groups, organizations that are doing other things. And when I say other things, I'm talking about Africa. They're either interested in doing things with Africa or already doing things with Africa and so forth. So, you know, I just find it, again, very interesting that there's no real effort to make certain that, you know, that our people in the communities are aware of what's going on a national, but definitely on an international level. Well, we know the reasons why, and we're going to kind of give more insight into that. Again, before we start talking with Brother Herschel, big shout out to Baba Ngozi. Also, again, give thanks to Lumumba, Brother Lumumba Uncaged, and certainly Sister Sheila Brown came in from the D.C. area. She did a book signing and a presentation on Amy Jox Garvey. And for those who do not know, this actually is Amy Jox Garvey Day. So while it's also Kuumba, this is also the day that Amy Jox Garvey was born. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we saluted her as well. And I also want to give a shout out to an ancestor. We talked about ancestors tonight, you know, for our Kwanzaa, for our Kuumba Kwanzaa, how very important it is to remember our ancestors. But, you know, what does that mean in real time? We say it means doing the work that they were doing, continuing that work. So we talked today or this evening about Baba Steve Coakley, and how we are planning to continue his work in April. We'll be doing a forum on the Boule and some other things that Baba Steve Coakley, you know, brought to our attention. And we're going to also be focusing on the work of Kwame Ture. And we talked again about Queen Mother Moore. Of course, we'll be doing Queen Mother Moore Weekend in July. MWM is going to be doing things for the whole 2023, various things in our communities. Here in Philadelphia, you know, as in most cities, cliquism has really clicked in. And so what we want to do is begin to demonstrate how we must begin to do things in our communities. You know, this internet and Facebook and Instagram and all of that is cool. It's very good. But, you know, our communities are kind of like, you know, getting really like a void there. There is not the connection. And we're going to talk a little more about this, family, because after doing some really in-depth research and evaluation, what we realized is that the intentional disruption of our communities all over the country was designed to make certain that folks could not organize in the community in such a way that it could produce change. And we're going to begin to share with you what we know to be the truth in that when we looked at the Black Panther Party, for example, all over the country, and we talked about this briefly today or this evening, all over the country, they were organizing in the community. And I got a chance to listen to Sister Safia Bakari, who many do not know, let's put it that way. And so, you know, I got a chance to hear one of her old interviews, and it was really, really interesting to, you know, to hear her talk about being a member of the Black Panther Party and also, you know, how she grew and developed. It was very, very interesting to hear that. And so I'm going to be sharing some of that with you a little later on, because we have to start raising the question in regards to where are the sisters in our communities that are really progressive. And what I mean by progressive are Black, are pro-Black, you know, are intentionally aggressive in the context of fighting for our people, and are doing it in such a way that they're neither wavering or assuming or, you know, having to mix in a whole bunch of other stuff. Okay. And so, again, we're going to talk a little more about that as we proceed. At any rate, family, what we want to do now is open up the mic for you all. And let's see if there's something that you would like to share before we get ready to go to our live line and talk with Brother Herschel Daniels, who, again, is the director or the founder of an organization called Friends of the African Union. And again, we want to start talking a little more about how we're going to connect to Africa and the diaspora. We have to begin to see how we're going to do that, you know, to a greater extent. Okay, but what I'd like to do is open up the phone lines for you all. If you have something that you want to share with us, we certainly will give you the opportunity to do that. You can press 1 now. And if not, what I'd like to do is, bear with me because I'm trying to cue something up. What I'd like to do is, tomorrow, of course, is Imani, and that is the Day of Faith. And okay, and we got a couple of hours before the so-called New Year comes in, and what some folks also call Watch Night, right? And so for those who do not know what Watch Night is, of course, you know, it's connected to the emancipation of our people, which we know, you know, is kind of interesting. Now, we can't really take away some realities, because even though we're ready today to, you know, to talk about emancipation and what it isn't or what it didn't do, surely what it did do for our ancestors at that time period, of course, was to give them hope. And so, you know, we can't, you know, dismiss that. We have to keep it in its proper context. Now, we know that there was some hidden agendas connected to that, but at the same time, certainly for our ancestors, it had to be something that was of, you know, of some importance and of some significance. And as a result, you know, every year for many years, including now, not as much so now, but certainly over the years, many of our ancestors, our grandparents and great-grandparents, on New Year's Eve would have a prayer ceremony where folks would come together and also, you know, not only be thankful for the incoming year, but in recognition of what was called then the Emancipation Proclamation. And so Watch Night was something that was, you know, kind of observed in waiting for the word of being emancipated. So that is something that we definitely should not just dismiss, because for our people at that time period, it was something. All right, family, listen, we're going to go to our live line, and we have one of our family got something to share with us. And caller, you are at 7169. 7169, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Good evening, Empress. How are you?
Hey, this is Baba Ngozi.
Yes, Brother Ngozi. I just want to say that the presentation today was excellent. You had three presenters, Baba New World Warrior, Sister Sheila Brown and Shifu L, with the, I forget his first name.
Right, Bilal.
Yes, all three of them were dynamic. And it was just very touching in their own way how they all embraced not only the principle of the day, but they shared their stories. So it was a wonderful experience.
Oh, give thanks, Baba. You know, it's so interesting because you have borne witness or bear witness to the truth and some realities that, you know, we are continuing to do the work that that our ancestors, you know, required us to do, and many of them did do. And for whatever reason, some of those types of works, discussion, interaction is just, you know, it's just not happening. And so, you know, I'm glad that you and a few others are really able to see that we're very serious about keeping the culture and keeping the spirit of resistance, you know, and doing those kinds of things. So, Baba, we really appreciate you coming and sharing, and I'm really glad that you enjoy, the brothers and sister, because, listen, we got to do it. If we don't do it, who else? You know, and lastly, let me just share this with you. One of the daughters that was there, one of the young ones, little sister London, she was so, like, impressed, right? Because she never been anything like that before.
Wow.
And she was like, how is your night tonight? I was like, yeah, you know. She really, really enjoyed it.
Good. Also, Empress, lastly, in speaking, your presentation, because you spoke for a few moments, that was very penetrating also, and it hit home, and it was very strong. So I just wanted to also include you having great impact with the message tonight.
Oh, give thanks, Baba. Well, you know, I've accepted some things now. It's been difficult to do so, but I've accepted. You know, we are at war. Well, you know that, and others know that. We are at war. But for me, the war was primarily the unnatural enemy that we've always had. Meaning I call the off white man. I don't call him the white man. I call him the off white man now. That's right. He's off, the off white man. So now what I now have accepted is that there's another part of the war, and the other part of the war is right within our communities.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other part of the war. I knew that for a while. You knew that for a while. Others knew it. But I didn't want to accept it. I really didn't. Now I've accepted it.
Okay.
So now I'm going to respond accordingly, you know. I just did not want to believe that things had gotten as bad as they are. And, we want to do festivals, we want to do celebratory kinds of things, and that's wonderful, but where's the work, where's the events, or where's the programs that deals with nation building, community building, family building? Where's it at?
Mm-hmm.
You see? And it's so evident. It is so evident. There's not one group in Philadelphia that focuses on those three things on a regular basis. Not one. Unless it's, you know, kind of just them, you know. In other words, mm-hmm. it's not community. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a few folks that I know they're doing things with each other, and that's cool. We all have little kind of, you know, things that we do, but I'm talking about for the community.
Right.
That connection is not happening. So, Baba, with that said, what is your thought? What do you think we can do, should do? I mean, go ahead.
I think you summed it up not only tonight, but on other nights, those who want to do are doing, and they do in the ways that they can. So those who are going to do, they're doing, and that's who we work with.
Right. That's right. Well, hey, there's slim pickings. No, it's slim pickings. Serious. I mean, this is just unbelievable, but, you know, it is what it is. But we're going to build, and that's all we can do. And, you know, at some point we will win. We shall win. And again, while I have you, Baba, I want to also give a shout-out to Brother Shamari. He came through. It was good to see him. You know, again, Philly, did you go to any other Kwanzaa programs this week?
There was one on Wednesday I went to, and I saw Baba New World Warrior there also. The Spirit of the Drum gave a presentation at Mount Zion.
Right.
And Brother Wasette was the host, but Brother New World Warrior was there also.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, again, it's unfortunate that we can't seem to get folks here in Philly, you know, to kind of step forward in a certain kind of way. You know, I've been encouraging a few of our brothers to do that, but there's a real reluctancy, a real hesitancy. So I don't know, brother. I don't know. Where's our brothers at? Where they at? I don't know, but it's all good. You know, we know we're going to rise, and that's the point. That's the thing that we got to do. So, Baba, thank you again. I'm looking forward to this so-called coming year. I'm glad that you enjoyed Brother Sifu and, of course, New World and our sister. And by the way, all three of them are now going to be a part of the MWM Speakers Bureau.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that we're putting together for 2023 is our own Speakers Bureau. So that way...
I've heard Brother Baba New World on your show call in. I believe I heard you had an interview with Sister Sheila Brown.
Yeah.
Has Brother Shifu been on your show before?
He has. It's been a while though, but you know, as I mentioned earlier, he's my former chief of security. He literally used to, you know, go with me when I would travel and so forth and, you know, make sure I was safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he mentioned earlier, but he was in a very, very bad accident. And as a result, actually he was pronounced dead like three times on the table.
Oh, that's what he spoke on that about the motorcycle incident.
So it was very, very bad. I mean, for him to be alive is a blessing at this point because, like I said, he literally died on the operating table.
Right.
And but you know, Creator said, you can't come yet. But as a result, it messed his leg up pretty badly. You know, bones was you know, shattered out of his leg.
I would not know it to have seen him walking and presenting the way he did. I would not have known that.
He's very disciplined, and so as a result of him, you know, knowing about healing and things of that nature, he was able to, you know, really kind of come through some of it. But it was very bad. He's still kind of struggling with, I'm not sure if it's short term or long term memory, because you know it was a severe accident.
Well, again, and I'm not discounting any of what you said because he did speak on that and really elaborating on it, but the way he presented tonight, you would not know that anything had happened to that man because he was. He was just that strong. His presentation was that strong and animated.
Yeah. Yeah, he know how to keep your attention. That's for sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. But, you know, but that's why it's good to see those kind of examples, Baba, because, you know, with all that he's been through physically, you know, to, you know, he, that fight, that's, and that's what we're talking about, the fight that we have in us as a people. It's like nothing else. It's like nothing else. Mm-hmm. And it can, in fact, bring us forward, you know, because like I said, I mean, you know, they literally said he was dead. So he fought. And so now, you know, he is with us still. And as you can tell, fiery.
Yes.
That's right. You never give up.
You have some wonderful living examples tonight.
Thanks. Give thanks. Well, you know, we're going to continue. Listen, we're going to continue. Ain't no doubt about it. You know, like, hey, I'm from Philly. And you know that song, ain't no stopping us now. We're on the move. It's okay.
Right.
So I embrace McFadden and Whitehead when it comes to that. You know, got to keep on moving, got to stay strong. And again, you know, Mumia has shown us that also with all that he's been through.
Yes.
He's still fighting. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Still fighting.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, Baba. Well, listen, we're going to get ready to move on. I thank you again. Always good to see you and, you know, really appreciate your support and love.
Great. Thank you, Empress.
All right, my brother. Peace to you.
Peace.
All right, family. Listen, we're waiting for Brother Herschel Daniels. In the meantime, let me see. That looks like that might be Brother Lee in queue. And Brother Lee, if that is you, if you got a few minutes that you want to share with us, we could certainly lend that time to you while we're waiting for Brother Herschel. If that's you, Brother Lee, press 1 so I know that it is you. I'm not sure. But at any rate, family, we are gearing up for 2023. And like I said, we get ready to do the Million Woman World March. That's right. You know, it's clear to us now that we really have to move forward. And so in doing that, we know that we've got to connect to our sisters all over the diaspora. It can't just be in the U.S. And particularly right now is a very interesting time. And what I mean by that is, and as Brother Ngozi mentioned, the conversation that we had tonight was real talk. It was fearless. It was very, very candid. And what I mean by that is, you know, we just said the things that a lot of people are afraid to say or won't say. We talked about the issues that are in our community that is feminizing our men. We talked about how our women, some, are losing their femininity. And I don't mean that in a way where, you know, you know, women got to be, you know, soft and all of that. I'm not talking about it in that manner. I'm talking about there's a graciousness that Black women have. And you know, people know me. I'm pretty aggressive. I'm pretty, you know, disciplined and kind of hard-hitting. But at the same time, I'm pretty feminine too. Right. So my point is there's a balance. And I'm saying that to say that we are losing a lot of our women and girls in such a way where that balance is just not happening. And so these are some of the things, again, that we're going to be addressing soon because the location that we were at today, starting about a couple of weeks, we'll be doing rites of passage for young girls. Yep. In the hood. Rites of passage, which will include Black/African history. It will include various other kinds of, you know, knowing how to prepare a meal, a healthy meal. There'll be some other classes that will allow our young girls and our women to be able to grasp more about what it is to be a black woman, an African woman, from our perspective. And this is one of the reasons why we have Sister Sheila with us tonight, because she has, the books that she's writing and the work that she's doing focuses on us as women. And again, we talked about how we're not buying into this feminism thing. That's not us. And once you know the history of it, then, you know, hopefully more of our women will realize that they never been us and that white women needed us in order to further their own goals. So we'll talk more about that later. Okay, that was Brother Lee. And so I'm going to give him the opportunity to come in. Brother Lee sent me something very recently that was very interesting, and I want to ask him about that and also share it with you. And this was in regards to the Congo. And I believe it was Zambia. And the point is losing our natural resources in Africa. Let's go to our live line and let's talk with Brother Lee Robinson. And I'm sure you're going to also want to tell us a little about the trip that he has coming up for Cuba in a couple of weeks. Hey, Brother Lee, what's going on?
African, good evening. How you doing?
Oh, good, my brother.
All the good stuff.
Yes, 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 Kaumba, Kaumba. Yeah, we just had our community Kwanzaa program. You know, I was telling everyone earlier that I intentionally did it in the hood. And because a lot of the Kwanzaa programs now, you very rarely are in the community. It's always at a school or a church, right? But to have something like right in the hood, we don't do that anymore. And so when I started celebrating Kwanzaa years ago, we would go any, we would do it at a store, like a black owned store, or you know, a organization might have an office or a space. We would do it wherever, you know. And so we wanted to kind of demonstrate that again. So it was in the hood. That's the bottom line. And it was good. It was really good. But Brother Lee, listen, before you tell us about your upcoming trip to Cuba, you sent me something that was real interesting. And I do subscribe to the Brother African Diaspora Network. I subscribed to his YouTube piece, and I didn't see that one. So thank you for sending that to me. But what are your thoughts about what's going on with the, in this case, it was a letter, a memorandum of some sort, and it was to start selling, you know, one of the major natural resources that two countries pretty much, you know, have the largest quantity of. What are your thoughts about it?
It just shows you the level of a couple of things. It showed the level of the intensification of the West dependency on Africa and African people. It makes you realize how important that we are to the rest of the world, particularly to the West and the U.S., but we don't realize it, but everybody else does. Now, when you talk about this letter of the Memorandum of Understanding that was signed about a week ago, at this African Union Summit meeting that took place in Washington, D.C., where about out of, 54 countries, I think like about 48, 49 came to meet with Biden. Again, it just shows you the whole state of the neocolonial status that our people are in as relates to Africa, African affairs, Empress. Because what really took place with this agreement was Zambia, and with the Democratic Republic of the Congo, is that there was, and it's really interesting because they want the cobalt to help make electrical cars and everything, the U.S. does and the West. But as of right now, the U.S. really don't have an infrastructure to make electrical cars. So why was it so significant for them to want to monopolize the cobalt for the rest of the world? My assumption is, I think they're doing it because it's a fight against not allowing China and other countries to have access to these resources and block them from having it. But at the same time, they're taking our important resources and our people not getting the equal value back from it, nor will they be able to benefit from it because our people are not in a position to control and to really know or to even take inventory to know how much they really have. This is just another attempt of how they're looting the resources of African people. And it's another example that Secretary Ray in Guinea taught us that if African people are not in a position to control their own resources and develop their own resources, then it's best for them to leave the damn resources in the ground until our people are in their position and are in their capacity to do so. What's the rush? So, again, this is another example in how our resources are being looted out of Africa for the interests of Europe and the United States, and our people continue to suffer. And they do this under the banner of these leadership. Most of African leadership today are under the influence and control by the West, led by the U.S. For example, there are no way in the world as of today anyone can justify having a U.S. military unit under AFRICOM in damn near every country on the continent except for one. You don't let no military entity come and establish a base inside of your country. There are even some countries that have FBI headquarters in their countries. Why would you let another foreign country set up an intelligence agency inside your country? And there are other countries, i.e., which I think we need to raise the stake with our brothers and sisters in Ghana, is that just to show you some of the contradictions of our backwardness, Sister Empress, everyone talk about Ghana and has a lot of positive things that are going on in Ghana, but also there are things that we need to correct and get it straight. For example, if you look at their educational system, Empress, understanding the family president of Ghana was Kwame Nkrumah. Did you know in that education system they don't have one book teaching the kids about who Kwame Nkrumah was? How the hell you have an education system in Ghana and they don't have no books, and I mean no books by Nkrumah? How do you explain the Empress? What is the political impact, the psychological impact, the educational impact of them not knowing their previous history, particularly about their heroes and sheroes?
Wow.
So this is disagreement of we selling off our resources and still can't benefit from it, not going to mean anything to our development. The best that can come out of this idea, come from this agreement, is you got a few so-called African leaders going to get rich of it and the masses of people continue to suffer before. Why would you call for an African summit and the shit take place inside of your enemy territory, United States? You travel 10,000 miles away from your home to go to someone's home to talk about your affairs. And on top of that, as a sister from, she's from Kenya, she's the head of the AU. And then from Zimbabwe. From Zimbabwe. Can't think of her name right offhand. But like she stated, if you look at some of the critique of this particular summit, how the West and the U.S. deal with African leaders, they treat them like little children. You don't have agenda when you deal with people on that level, the heads of states, and you don't have agenda. They came on here with no damn agenda. They came over here to listen to what Joe Biden could tell them what he wants them to do. He giving them orders. You don't do that with heads of state. You don't call meetings if you have not had agendas in advance, 6 months or a year in advance. Both parties had a chance to contribute to the agenda. But that's how they disrespect Africa and African leaders, because they don't see us as their equal. They still think we are their children. So we got to change this game. We got to change that game. You know, that's, you know, we ain't down with that.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought the article is interesting, because people keep asking why Africa is still in the state as it is today, and part of it is to is the reflection of our political leadership. And most of our leadership are owned and controlled by external forces alongside. It's neocolonialism.
Right. This is starting to look really, really bad, Brother Lee. I mean, it's been looking bad, but this is getting scary. You know what I'm saying? And family, just to recap what we're talking about, Congo and what's it, Zambia, Brother Lee?
Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Right. And what we're talking about, family, is cobalt. Now, the what we were watching and what we've now are a little more aware of is the fact that we know that people like Elon Musk and others are really pushing for this electric car thing. And ultimately, that is going to be one of the waves of the future. It's just like, you know, what we're seeing with cell phones. Remember big, bulky phones people used to walk? You remember them, Brother Lee, those big, giant phones you used to hold in your hand? Yeah, anyway, the point is that at some point, we are going to see more electric cars. The issue and the problem is what they run on. And what we now know is that cobalt is primary elements, natural resources that is used in these batteries, right? Zambia and the Congo are two of the countries that have it the most plentiful. And what has happened in the recent meeting, both countries have agreed, both nations have agreed to collaborate with the United States in making certain that the United States now has access to the cobalt in those countries. That's what we're talking about. And this is very, very important. I mean, we've heard it before, of course, with diamonds and other, assets that resources and wealth, really, that's in Africa. But here we are now, this is just crazy, and that puts it mildly. It's scary.
And we look at the agreement, if I'm not mistaken, they're talking about monopolizing, allowing them to exclusively have the agreement for the mining and the extraction of the resources, of the minerals. Why you right. give it to one country? Why don't you give it to the best bidder or have multi nations have access to, and you get the best deal from all of them that will best benefit
right.
you. You don't let nobody, no one person, no one entity dominate your particular resources. Again, to me, it's another reinforcement of what took place in the Berlin Conference 1884-85.
Yeah.
There's a replay of trying to recolonize Africa. Everything is dialectical. Everything is positive and negative, and just like you went forward, it's also possible you can go backwards. And if we're not careful, and what we are at the track that we're doing, as Brother PLO, the movement stated, that Africa is on the path of being recolonized right in front of our eyes. And what takes place in the policy, and what takes place in Africa and the policy they have towards Africa, there's the same attitude and policy they have towards you no matter where you are if you're African. That's another reality people need to understand. The way they treat Africa is the way they're going to treat any African and African countries in the diaspora. At this point in the game, the U.S. and Europe want to be a monopoly in terms of controlling the international world affairs when it comes to economic development and resources. I didn't understand, but I don't know if people realize, I read an article about a year ago, 2 years ago, they're talking about how the U.S., these companies like, what's these little stupid companies that do internet, Yahoo and these little internet companies, right? Tech companies. If I'm not mistaken, they said they have over 2,000 satellites or up in the air over top of the continent of Africa, why are you allowing them to put that many satellites over the top of Africa? 2,000 satellites just on Africa alone? Mm-hmm. Why so many? What's the plan there? Clearly the plan is there. They identifying what's underneath the soil in Africa, on the continent. And this is where your strategic battles and walls going to be fought over and around. Even with that boy Bill Clinton, I think it was Bill Clinton a couple of years ago, stated that, what did he say? He said the Congo. He said the Congo is so big that when talking about making bread and stuff, there's enough land, agricultural land in the Congo alone, if I'm not mistaken, that it can feed the whole world. That's what he stated. Just one country alone in Africa can feed the whole world. So all this misconception about, you know, the world don't have enough resources and people can't get enough food to survive, that's a bunch of bull. He stated that. Mm-hmm. Now, this is one country. Also, it's known that with the technology that we know, they can take technology, they can take the energy, the heat from the center of the world, central part of Africa, and they can use technology coming from under the central part of Africa, and they can use that as a means of give electricity that will electrify the whole continent.
The whole world.
So they know these things. The question becomes, you know, what we gonna do about it?
Yeah, right. There it is. There it is.
How do we deal with these realities that they're facing ourselves? Also, you know, one of the positive things about Africa that most people don't understand is Africa is a very young country. They got 56% of their population between the age of 18 and 25.
Wow.
Whereas in other countries, like in Europe and stuff, they are very old in this country. And that's one of the things that's very frightening about. So they got to find ways to figure out ways how to maintain and continue to dominate Africa economically. Well, you can't stop economically for political domination. It's the ideas that come first, the politics that come first. Of course they couldn't do this if they didn't have collaboration from certain sectors among our people. So, you know, it's a question again, and Krumah is correct from our understanding of seek the political kingdom first. If we don't educate our people politically on the realities of our people and our capabilities and why they must understand certain things must be done and how it best to be done, we'll continue to suffer. We'll continue to be the laughingstock for the world. They can pay while we can play. We got to change that scenario. So, Sister Empress, we need warriors like you to continue to politically educate our people because that's going to be the only way we can get out of it. We got to get our people away from these football games on Sundays.
Or these stupid
comedy shows on Saturdays. It's just, so we got to transform that. We got to move our time more. We got to move our behavior towards issues and areas that really going to reflect our understandings of our real realities and how to move this thing forward. I mean, today in the education system, not only in the United States, but probably throughout the world, but I know in the U.S., they have made your public school system into really prisons. And people don't understand that. They'll reduce the teachers into prison guards. They got our youth that act their inmates. And they have damn police inside the school to make sure they're builders.
So if you
try to change this, you come into opposition and you become enemy to the state. So the people don't understand that the state has already declared anyone who gonna fight against the status quo, anyone who truly wanna be free, anyone who truly wanna be who they are and not be what someone else wants you to be, you are already declared the enemy. Don't you know the other day I laughed at Empress, I read an article the other day, I don't know if folks realize, in terms of how they legalize your reality in terms of making you a criminal when you don't even do anything other than doing what any human being would do, that is to get information so you can make a better world for yourself and humanity. That is to say, they got a new concept called
They got a new list called the Information Terrorist List. If you are applying information to make people conscious, if you are applying information to show out the hypocrisy or the contradiction in the Western policies, you are now being viewed as a terrorist, an information terrorist. You're aiding the terrorists. Did you know that?
No, no. Wow.
So these are the kind of games where they make rules and laws, and then they put on TV and tell you this is what you're supposed to do. You know, when I was in school several years ago, many years ago, really, but when I was in school in my marketing class, one of the things that the professor told us, and I never forgot this, he said that this society has been trained to take orders, not to think.
Right.
So he said the easier and better to get people, if you want people to do something, you don't ask them, what should we do? You just tell them.
Yeah.
And it's so true today, so true today. So we got to change these kind of behaviors and narratives and stuff. But go ahead, sister.
No, you just reminded me of something. Because it's been a couple of years now, but I used to do a little research on the education system here in the U.S., particularly during the time of the Rockefellers. And so that really kind of gave me a lot of insight into, and it kind of goes to what you were just saying, how the public school system began to go through a transformation in such a way where it was to do exactly what you just said. It was more to provide just enough, I won't say education, but just enough indoctrination so that folks could be workers. You see, it wasn't really about trying to do, you know, what one might call edification, which is totally different from education. It was really designed to make sure that you were able to function in the system and primarily as a worker. And, of course, you know, there was a small percentage of folk who would go on, of our people, that is, that would go on that so-called higher education and then go into a profession. But the majority were going to be workers. And it was designed under the Rockefeller legislation and writings and so forth. That's really what, you know, that whole public school system became. And so, you know, now, as you said, the prison pipeline is there, and some real tricky stuff is happening now, Brother Lee, because remember, we had a lot of juvenile lifers, right? And that's shifting a little bit, but now there seems to be something else going on that will increase the incarceration rate. And so we got to really watch that. But the question I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to go back to that for a moment. The question I wanted to ask you was, because, you know, I'm really focused on solution orientation. What if I could get some sisters, right? And I'm not talking about these bougie women. I'm talking about some regular, everyday sisters that, you know, might want to take either their manicure money or, you know, their party money or whatever, you know, just small amounts, a small group of black women who wanted to invest. And I'm saying this because this is really what I'm looking at developing. Why does other people have to, you know, be the ones to invest in the natural resources of our people, of our homeland? What are your thoughts about that? In other words, I mean, I want to start proposing that kind of possibility because I'm going to tell you, and I'm sure you've seen it for yourself, you know, some of our people, some of our parents even, you know, did not have college education or whatever, but they knew how to invest. For example, my dad, he bought stock in Sears and Roebuck, because that's where he worked at the time. You know, he's a janitor, but he bought some stock. You see what I'm saying? So he didn't have no whole lot of money, but he had enough money to, you know, put aside a couple of dollars. You see?
And I'm saying we're not, you know, doing that. So I'm saying that's all he knew to do, right? But here we are today. Why can't we begin to encourage our people to start investing more in Africa? What are your thoughts about that?
Empress, I really gave my thoughts on that. We'd be here all night. But let me say this. let me say this in terms of the spirit of your questions. Investment is just like anything else. They are good investment and they are bad investment.
No doubt.
I would say this. When we talk about investing in Africa, we got to make sure what is that, or define, you know, what is that we want to invest in, and make sure that investment has a direct link to how it's going to benefit the overall society in general, and that just goes to a few people who may control the industry. It's unfortunate at this point in time, the way the world economy is set up in a way that when you invest, it's only really going to benefit a few people in the industry and not necessarily the industry of the whole people. So we got to change that paradigm around. And one of the best ways we make or do this, yes, we can make investment, but I think part of the, before we really talk about investing in minerals and other stuff, I think it would be a better investment to educate our people, put our investment in people to make sure they are developed and understand this whole question of political economy and how to make these things, transform these things, and how to bring about the kind of changes that we need in order for our people to create an environment where everybody will have access to good health care, good education, to a good agricultural industry where we can feed ourselves, to a good society where we can develop schools, institutions, that we can train our people and don't have to be a burden on any one individual. So investment is a good thing, but it's a question of what is that we're talking about investing. I think we should, but I think when we're talking about, if we're talking about investing as a president structure, the best thing that probably end up happening to us is we're going to be investing in our own oppression, not be aware of it. But what will happen in this case, for a lot of cases, and I don't think it's a good thing, is the individuals who may do the investment now will not understand the dynamic. They may benefit, but the suffering of your people will increase because that's the way the economic structure is set up. So, you know, like Wall Street, this question of investment, that's the biggest con game in the world. Anytime you can be a billionaire one day and you sign a piece of paper based on investment, and the next day you can lose all your damn money in one day, lose $1 billion. So something's wrong with that whole structure. Yes, I agree. We should invest, but we must make sure we in the position to ensure the way we use our resources, the way we invest our money, it will be used in a way that it will concretely, as you said, put stuff on the ground where the people would really be benefit from it tangibly. So that would be just my general response to that, Empress. You know, you might have some other thoughts, but those are mine.
Okay, no, I mean, I wanted to hear your thoughts on that because, needless to say, in this day and age, we have the capability to do research like never before. And so, you know, of course, you know, we would look at what things would be, you know, worth us investing in the context of, you know, a conscious kind of decision. So that goes without saying, and I'm saying that to say, because we now do have that capability to do research, certainly we can, you know, at least begin to examine. It might not be anything, but then it might be something. My point is, I don't feel that we're really doing due diligence. I don't feel that we are literally, at least as a black woman, I know I haven't. You know, I don't have a problem in saying that. I have not looked at that. I'm looking at it now, though, because I see the way the world is going, and I see that I've got to start looking at how am I going to make sure that my children, you know, is going to, you know, have it a little better than me. And I know that other black women are feeling the same way. So I'm not just saying it, you know, because I'm interested. I am. But I'm also saying as a collective, I know that there's some other folks out there, and I'm saying women, but I'm, you know, any of our people but I can say women because that's kind of my area. But my point is, we've got to at least begin to examine the possibilities. And I hear what you're saying, Brother Lee, and I totally agree. I know this stuff is really kind of, you know, jacked up, as they say, in terms of, you know, doing business. But I'm saying again, you know, for us to develop a think tank or some other mechanism that will allow us to at least examine what might be there. You know, we know that it's risky, or some of it is risky, but is there anything, you see? And I'd rather, you know, kind of and look at it closer and have a better idea about it based on the fact that we really researched it, you see, than to just assume or to just, you know, look at what I see is going on, what we know is going on. But it's like anything else. Nothing gets better if we don't struggle to make it happen. You see,
well,
we know it's bad.
Well, let's look at investments from a different perspective. Let's talk about investments to the extent that we invest in Africa to the extent that we concretely know what the benefits are. Now, we're doing this investment not because we expect a return. We're doing it because we understand that long-term interest is good to have a strong and educated Africa. So I think when we talk about investments, we have to also incorporate that into our thinking. See, one of the things is that if our position is that, you know, we invest solely because we anticipate some returns, then on many, many levels, you may be disillusioned in terms of that aspect, given what Brother Lee talked about. He talked about the instability when it comes to investments, or even some of this kind of corruption that may exist in terms of individuals that you're dealing with these investments. We have to understand that those things are very, very real possibilities. But if we have some forethought, if we understand clearly that investments is for the long-term interest of African people, then we can target those investments, but we do so with an expectation that be no returns. So what do you think about that?
I think that would defeat the purpose to some degree. So my point is, and by the way, family, this is now Brother Haki. Y'all just tripped it on me. See, I know the difference, but my listeners might not. But anyway, so here's the thing. Again, the balance is very important. Normally, as you said, Brother Haki, most folk, at least, you know, from what I've seen in my lifetime, most folk just do the investment piece, meaning they're investing and they're looking, their whole focus is a return. And what I'm saying is that, you know, we are now in a very interesting kind of realm of reality and existence, meaning more of us are, I won't say politically astute, but definitely we got a little more insight than before. And I'm saying this just in terms of me. I wasn't always, you know, where I'm at now, mentally or politically. And with that said, I now have to look at what other things can we do to advance. With that in mind, that means also from a righteous standpoint, for lack of a better word. So again, I'm not looking to invest for the sake of a return, but simultaneously, I'm looking at investing in such a way that, you know, that it can be balanced out. But again, here's where it becomes, I think, clearer. I could invest in stuff right here in the U.S. if it was just about a return. I'm making a conscious decision to take my money and put it somewhere that I think is going to help my people. But do I want a return on that? What would be the point of investing? People don't invest money. See, it's one thing when you invest time, when you invest other things. But generally, when folks invest money, they're looking for a return. So we got to be realistic about that. Now, if I want to just give you something, that's one thing. I ain't looking for nothing. And I've done that. Believe me. I've done it on numerous occasions. just, you know, I want to donate to it or contribute to it, and that's all there is to that. I ain't looking for nothing. But when I say I'm going to invest, that means we get ready to do some business. That's my response.
Yeah, well, you know, that is an interesting analysis. You know, the thing is this, you know, one of the things, when you talk about investments, clearly there are many avenues in which you really can invest, I mean, you know, across the board. I mean, when you talk about commodities like food, technology, those investments are blue chip in nature, and so they're guaranteed to make you money. So if you really, if your focus is to make some money, then it seems to me that blue chip investments are the way to go. So even aside from the question in terms of blue chips, even if you talk about just bonds, government bonds, you know, over 5-10 year period, I mean, you can make lots and lots of money. Given the overall decline of the U.S. economy, there's more money to be made in bonds as opposed to stocks. So if your focus is to make some money, then those are the investments that you would make in terms of making money. The question is, when you make those investments in those bonds, you're making investments in terms of those commodities like food, oil, and so forth. When you make those investments, once you get those large returns, the question inevitably becomes, what are you going to do in terms of those large returns? If your investment is that you're going to use those to further your investment in terms of making more returns, then you sort of defeat the purpose, because it's a whole question in terms of the system. We talk about the messed up nature of the system. When we talk about that, we understand that if we don't do something in terms of confronting that system, then we know the system is going to consume us. But if our focus becomes that it's about capitalizing or making a return, then the question in terms of how do we combat the system becomes irrelevant. And this is the problem, the struggle that our people are having, because you got a lot of middle-income people or wealthy African people out there, you know, who are saying, listen, I don't give a damn about a struggle. I'm only concerned about making a return. So from their perspective, all right, that's just and understandable. But from revolutionary perspective, in terms of trying to overcome these systematic injustices, we can't take that position that, listen, for us, the defining criteria in terms of making the decision is based upon returns. We do so at our own disadvantage, and this is the point I'm trying to get. So I understand what you're saying. You're trying to balance expectations. On one hand, you want to help, but the same token, you know, giving up the money is cost you it's going to impact you on some level, and so get some return on that sort of balances out the reality is that you use those investments that you could have been used to do something else. At least in that regard, you get something in return, and that's understandable in terms of what you're saying. But the whole problem is that it has to be balanced against the system in which we're at. In particular, let me just say one thing, and I'll conclude with this. I think we have to understand one thing. When we talk about the decline of capitalism, when we talk about the decline of the U.S. government, we have to understand, when we talk about the decline, we got to understand that, you know, when we talk about something like investments, you know, and see, and like one of the things Brother Lee raised, which is very, very key, you know, investment is a zero-sum game. There are winners and losers. We have to understand that given that context, given there are winners and there are losers, then the reality is that when we take these investments, the odds are that you're going to lose unless you're a major investor. If you're a major investor, you have access to inside information to ensure that you win big. Most of us are not big-time investors. We're small-time investors. So the question is, so if we think that somehow our small investments are going to get us where we want to be in terms of large returns, then I think we're slightly missing the boat in terms of reality, in terms of what was capitalism is really all about and how investments with this economic system actually works. So the problem is that once you tell people, you know, listen, with the expectation that if you invest, you know, you can get a return and make things better at the same token, when those things don't materialize, then what you create is someone who's disgruntled, someone who's no longer interested in anything you have to say, simply because their focus has always been about the investment. I'd much rather tell people, listen, this is the system. This is how this crap works. All right? You can invest in it. That's fine. When you lose, hey, just understand that's part of the game. But more importantly, understand that your investment that is by no stretch of the imagination is going to reduce the kind of suffering, the mass alienation, or the mass injustices African people confront. On the contrary, you reinforcing those injustices, because what you're doing inadvertently, you're building up a system which is diametrically against or in opposition to the interests of African people. So they got to fundamentally understand that.
So
they understand that fundamental contradiction. Let me just finish this, and I'll conclude. Once they understand that fundamental contradiction, you know, if they want to make that decision in terms of because they're looking for an investment, that's fine. But at least I understand that if things go south, then I understand that they have a much more comprehensive understanding of what goes on in the world in terms of how the system works. And then in that context, then there's still that opportunity in terms of actually reaching those people in terms of discourse, because they understand what you've been telling them before has come to fruition, and so now they better have better understanding in terms of what you've been trying to articulate to them in the first place, as opposed to simply deluding them to believing that if they invest, everything's going to be all right. Now I'll close with that.
Okay, so, and I get all of that. What I'm saying and talking about is a little different, and that to me is where we have to go with this. And what I mean by that is this. Just like you have, what is it, conscientious objectors or observers, my point is to do something that you basically, in other words, there's a conscious level involved in it. And I think what has happened, particularly, you know, from my observation over this past decade is we don't deal with being innovative. We don't deal with being creative. This is still dead to end of y'all. And so as a result, we don't even attempt, most don't even attempt to examine things to the degree where we can, like, say, well, okay, what part of this is like anything else? What part of this can we utilize where it can be applied for what we want it to be applied for? Again, there's a conscientious effort or conscientious move in doing this. So I'm not talking about dealing with it in the same context or in the same kind of exact way that is traditionally done. That's not what I'm talking about. It's like anything else. You know, you are at some point capable of extracting something from something and then tossing the rest of it away. You see? So again, while we know that various commodities are, you know, of a higher caliber or yields, you know, a certain type of return, for lack of a better word, we know that. And as you just said, food, gas, other kinds of things. Okay, so there are other things on another level that can still be looked at, that can be invested in. And what I'm saying is that we spend a lot of money as black folks here in the U.S. And with that, there's no direction. It just goes, and then the enemy or whomever is just has carte blanche, able to do whatever. So my point is, at some point in time, should we not be looking at, since we're going to spend this money, by the way, billions, trillions perhaps, the point is to have some kind of focus. And see, that's what I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about investing for the sake of investing. I'm not talking about the investing just for the sake of return. That's what I said earlier. So let me repeat it again. I'm saying to research, investigate, examine what kinds of things can, in fact, be invested in. And I'm not talking about on no gigantic scale. We're not talking about that kind of money. But what I do know is this, and my dad taught me this based on little chump change, based on, they used to save their pennies literally and dimes, literally, and then take that and then transform it into something else. Our people did this. And not on the level of the elite or the middle class or the upper middle class. Let's put it that way, because the middle class is struggling now too. So my point is,
we're not even thinking in a creative manner that even enables us to examine those possibilities. We know we're dealing in a capitalistic society. We know we're dealing in a corrupt society, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, some products, even some that are black, are hitting the market. But who is even taking the time to examine what they are? And again, there's some conscientious kinds of things going on. Here's a perfect example. I was looking at some of the white corporations, right? Because with some of the moves that we're making, some of the moves that we're making, I have to examine who's going to be a responsible corporation. Because when we do the recharge genocide, I want to see what corporations are in agreement with reparations. You know, it's a strategic move. My point is, so I began to examine companies like Ben & Jerry. Now, me personally, I would not, you know, want to get involved in any other corporations for me personally. However, if I'm going to do business, I would look at who at least has some inkling of justice or wanting to do the right thing. Since I'm going to buy some ice cream any freaking way, I mean, not me personally, because I don't buy none of that anyway, but I'm just saying, for those that do purchase ice cream, as opposed to Breyers or whatever, Häagen-Dazs or whatever, wouldn't it be interesting to see what the feasibility is, what the possibilities are, for a company who is trying to do some kind of social justice or whatever you want to call it, initiatives, in comparison to the ones that ain't trying to do nothing? Do you see my point here?
Yeah, if it's, we're not disagreeing with the intent of your position. That's not what we're speaking to. We're in agreement with you on that. The only thing that we're saying is, because, you know, if you look at Guinea position in 1958 when they got their independence and their relationship to France, you know, France wanted to come in at that time and do a lot of extraction of minerals and minerals, oil, and all these different kind of other cobalt and bauxite. And Secretary Ray took a position, and many people criticized him for it, that they would not, they would refuse to enter into any kind of negotiation dealing with minerals, because at the stage of their people's development, they were not prepared at that time in order to make sure that they could greatly benefit from this kind of economic exchange and investment. So his position was, let the minerals stay where it is until the people in Guinea have organized themselves or educating themselves, knowing how to properly get the most value from the resources, and they can properly use it. I think that was the correct position. And I think that's the error that Africa continue to make even today. For most investors that are going on in Africa today, if I could and were possible, you know, maybe we should just stop this shit right now, because we're not getting anything out of it, but nothing no more than more misery. And a few damn people becoming billionaires and running all around the world, ripping off the people money. So in terms of your intent, Israel agree. But I'm saying in terms of, as you would say, the reality, let's keep it real, the stuff on the ground, the way it's structured as of today, you know, most of the stuff is structured where the way you'll be participating in your own oppression if you choose to operate it based upon the rules of the game. We got to figure out how do we change the rules of the game, or even if we want to play that game at all right now. Because we ain't got to be in a hurry. What's that rush? What's the rush to get our resources out?
No. I definitely agree in that situation or in that regard. I have no argument for any of that.
But I do think what you're saying is,
it would be wise for us, for whatever excess of money we do have, to put it in a way where we can benefit and control it. So in that sense, we're on board with you on that one, on that aspect. But how do we best do that? That's the question. I think that's where the struggle comes in. But go ahead, please make the point.
Well, no. And again, it was kind of two different things that we were talking about. And no, I definitely agree in terms of, you know, what's going on in Africa and throughout the diaspora, obviously. My point is that we are not, to me, we're not even attempting to come up with possibilities. Even, and I'm not talking about on that level, I'm talking about just in general. You know, sometimes you've got to start where you're at in order to grow and develop.
Agreed.
And so to get our people even acclimated to certain ideas, concepts, and certain things, what is the prerequisite or what is the prelude to the bigger picture? You see? So it's two things that, you know, that this whole conversation have gone into, because my original one was specifically focusing on, you know, what was going on in Africa in terms of Zambia and Congo. But at the same time, I'm looking at how can we as a people here also begin to get our people a little more, you know, move to think about, you know, how we need to utilize our monies or how we need to utilize whatever. Here's an example. We're getting ready to launch something here in Philly. Let me finish this. We're going to implement something here in Philly, and what it is it is not new, but it ain't nobody doing it, and it's this. We're getting ready to do some sessions where we barter. We will do barter, exchange, and what was the other one? It was three things. Trade. Barter, exchange, and trade. Now, for us, that has a certain kind of dynamic. But at the same time, to initiate something like that in our communities, just dealing with our own stuff is so different. Number one, but what could that possibly do? In dealing with the mind, in dealing with the capability, the possibilities. So my point is that I'm not even hearing creative, and again, this is Kumba, y'all. I'm not hearing creative kinds of things that we can do before we get to the other step. What are some of the pre-steps?
Let me ask you this question before I make a response to your question, Justin Amphis. You say you're doing three things, barter, trade, and exchange. What's the distinction between these three categories? What's the difference between bartering, exchanging, and trading?
Well, the difference is going to be the way we structure it. Because, again, it is to get our people acclimated to doing something that they haven't been doing. So while in one world, it's all the same. It's like anything else. It's how you structure it. So I can't go into the details of it right now, but I can say this. Each mode of operation would be different. For example, here in Philly and in other places, you have something called Trader Joe's. Well, you ain't trading nothing but your money, but it's still called Trader Joe's. So my point is, it's really up to us. If we're talking about Kwanzaa, In the principle context, how we define things is important. How we structure it, even though it might be, whether, you know, in one way it is this, but how we do it, just like a whole bunch of other stuff we do, how we talk, how we dance, how we do something. So again, to take a group of folk in the community who might have a painting, who might have some jewelry, who might have, you know, some other kind of something that they are prepared to get rid of or exchange or trade or barter to even enter, to even begin that kind of process. You see. So again, at another time, I will elaborate on what each one of those things in terms of the operation of it, how we would implement it. But the idea is, if again, you know what they say, somebody's trash might be somebody else's treasure or some stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, someone's trash or someone's treasure.
Right. Right. And I'm just saying, we're not doing things that allows us to begin to shift the paradigm.
And I think you have just answered your own question of how do we begin and what is prerequisite. What you're telling me is, by your concrete actions that you just explained, is that I think you're doing one of the most important things that our people can do, and that's to learn that there are things bigger than they are as the individual. To make them identify as a group, you know, we'd be in a better interest if we start thinking and functioning and acting as a group. So I think in that sense, you have taken one of the major things that need to be done in order to get up down the road that we're speaking to. So, hey, that's a good thing. Because at least you're forcing our people down, they get to see. They got something more they can commit themselves to other than just themselves. It's something bigger and greater than them. And also you make them realize a lot more to your advantage if you start functioning things more as a collective, as a group, you know. So I think that's one of the major things as a beginning step. This is how to move forward. So we commend you on that.
Well, again, you know, to begin to be innovative in our thinking processes, to do things that is not only reasonable, but that, you know, is possible, very possible. It doesn't take a lot. And so to at least begin these processes, it might work, it might not work. I don't know. We don't know. But to do nothing, we know that ain't going nowhere, you see. And so it's not just for me. It's not just about being bigger than or better than or whatever you just said. It's not just that. It's a shifting in the mind in such a way where you don't even have to have money, you see, or what
right.
they call money. That, see, again, this is a very holistic approach here. So we are depending on fiat or cash or dollars that they print up at will. So what happens when that ain't happening?
I see.
So psychologically, right. So again, we're creating an interaction with one another with the expectation of where this system is going. And so rather than the wait, it's just like COVID. Who thought that for 3-4 weeks or whatever, everything would get shut totally down all over the U.S., parts of the world too, but I'm just focused on the U.S. And I'm saying that it's not like we ain't been told this kind of stuff, but nevertheless, we were nowhere prepared whatsoever. So my point is, some of it is psychological. And again, to be able to know that we can do certain things, why? Because we did it. You see, it's like anything else. Once you know that you have a capability to survive, then when stuff hits the fan, it doesn't affect you quite the same way as it would somebody else. And I'm just saying, we're not preparing ourselves, our people, for, you know, what is obvious. So on one hand, I'm looking at how, you know, because I'm always thinking on different levels. My brother used to play chess, and he would always play chess on three. He would play three boards at a time. So I kind of, you know, learned that from him, where I don't think on no one level. I can't. It just bores the hell out of me. And so I'm saying that to say, we have got to begin to think simultaneously. So again, I started off with, you know, what about if we did some, and I wasn't talking about no big major investment. No. But nevertheless, looking to see what was possible within a certain realm when it comes to commodities or whatever as it pertains to Africa. But then the other side of that was right here. You know, what could we do right here to shift that paradigm, to make that change? So you know, so this is good. This is good. Good dialogue. Appreciate it.
It's all good. We're in this boat together.
Oh, no doubt. Uh-oh, 12 o'clock, y'all. I guess that's
good night,
you know,
Queen.
Something that means something.
Good night. Good night, Queen.
Oh, all right, my brother. Yeah, it's a new year, as they say.
I'm still here. I want you to be in, sister. I'm here. I ain't going nowhere.
I know that's right. Well, I'm going to turn it back over to you, Brother Lee. Tell us about what you got coming up with the trip.
Well, what we're planning is, you know, African Wedding Association has built a bridge to unite our people. Cubans want no alias. Cubans, if you're a special area, because it's a liberated zone. It's one of those countries, one of the areas where the people are truly free to trade and make decisions and dictate what they want to do as relates to their overall well-being. That's why Cuba is such a threat to the U.S., because it's a model that the world can learn from in terms of, one, what it takes for people to get their liberation, but two, more importantly, there is another alternative to reorganize the society. And you don't have to use the capital model that we live under the United States or that you may see in Europe and throughout the world. So that's why it's a threat. So what we're doing is, like always, we won't pay our homage to Cuba and give our respect and our thanks to the Cuban and Cuban Revolution for all the things they have done for Africa, African people, and continue to do. Well, those who may not know may be listening to my voice saying, what has Cuba done? Why are we doing this? Well, we just said ever since 1959, since Cuba got their independence, they integrated themselves into the African Revolution. They were there for many African independence movements and liberation movements, whether in Algeria, whether in Guinea-Bissau, whether in the Congo, whether in Angola, you know, you name it, whether in Ethiopia. The Cuban people have shown their commitment to the liberation and freedom of African people. That is just one aspect of that contribution to Africa and African diaspora. Also, when we look at Cuba, in terms of they understand that the purpose of knowledge and information is not to be used as a commodity to make wealth off it, but to use it as a tool to advance humanity. And when we say this, we can see how Cuba have taken their society and turn into a society where it's willing to train all humanity to be a better humanity by offering, i.e., free education in the healthcare industry to African people, the U.S. and throughout the world. You know, they have a school called ELON, Latin American School of Medicine, where they are training our future doctors to become doctors free of charge if they get in the program and go to Cuba. Now, we're talking about investment of $500,000 to $1 million per person who can go to Cuba and become any kind of doctor they want to be and come back and serve their communities. If you look at this COVID crisis that is going on, Cuba has about five different sets of serums or medicines you can take to help fight these viruses. And along with the makeup of these medicines, from my understanding, it doesn't do the kind of physical damage or harm to your body that these medicines would do to you that if you get it from the U.S. or from Europe. When you look at Cuba politically, historically, any time when our leadership, our political leaders was in trouble and they had to leave, had to exile this country, keep from being assassinated, such as, you know, Robin Williams, Kwame Ture, even President, our sister Sada Shakur, Sister Mahana from Black Panther Party, it was a safe haven where they protected Africans and continue to do that today. So what we're doing, Sister Empress, we want our brothers and sisters principally who understand and appreciate the value of Cuba, its contribution to our people, our struggle, and humanity, is to come and travel with us in a conscious way of going against the U.S. blockade. The blockade is another method of a warfare in which the U.S. has used to stranglehold countries that will not buy their to them, and particularly African countries. So Cuba is an African country. I don't know if people understand that or not. So what we do it on a conscious basis, we're going there at the minimum so we can learn from that society. More importantly, though, you're going there because the kind of principles and values that Cuba has are the kind of principles and values that will help further unite and consolidate our people globally. I mean, when you think about Cuba, you know, you think about this whole question for women and their liberation and treating them as equal. When you think about Cuba, you think about them as society where the rank and file really truly have input in their society and how they want to produce and create things and what democracy really look at. When you think about Cuba, you look at and you feel safety. The only thing you know, no one feel like this in a world where you be safe and feel safe, very safe. Cuba is one of the places. When we first get out of the plane, I can tell you for the number of years, over 25 years we've been taking people or more, you know, you have a totally different feeling in Cuba that you would never feel it, you know, anywhere else. Even Barack Obama did something that no president has ever done before. He was in Old Havana, which we know very well. He ended up taking a walk around the block totally by himself while in his security. And would no other president do that in any other country. But he knew how well safe Cuba was. So these kind of things that people need to understand and in Cuba. And so we're asking y'all, we listen to this program tonight, spread the word, and we'd like for y'all to come with the African Awareness Association as we take our tour from January 23rd to the 30th, which is about 3-4 weeks away. You see our time, must respond by next week. To come with us. And as part of the trip, you're going to get to go to 3 particular cities or areas. We're going to Havana, you plan to go to Matanzas, and we're going to Trinidad. Along with that, you'll be given a special treat. They also happen to have the Havana Jazz Festival. So at least 3 nights out of 7, you will spend some time at the Jazz Festival. As well as, more importantly, you get to visit various Afro-Cuban communities and get to talk to your brothers and sisters, you know, on a one-on-one basis to try to get a better understanding of their history, their realities, and how we can work together and make a better world, not only for our people and for Mother Africa, but for all of humanity. So, brothers and sisters, we ask you all to come and join us. Act now by calling. You can reach us at 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435. Or you can just email us at African Awareness Association 2 at Gmail, or check out our website, www.aaa-cubatours.com. So give us a call out there. If you can't go, we ask you that you can participate by doing several things. Number one, send in a donation to help us sponsor the youth or students or someone to come with us. Number two, approach your church. Approach your work study group. Approach your organization to send a representative. Number three, let's make a contribution to continue to support our work. And number four, more importantly, we would like to come back to your community when we come back and let's have a program to educate our communities on the real realities, the importance of strengthening our relationship, and let's do all we can to try to find a way to create the climate where we put an end to this illegal, immoral, unjust and racist U.S. blockade against Cuba.
All right. Thank you, Beverly. So, quick question. The blockade, where are we at with that presently? What does it look like now? Does it look like there's going to be any change soon, or from your perspective, what's going on?
We in the area as if it was just in 1961 when they decided to do that. Has not been fundamentally changed. And as a matter of fact, it even got worse under the last administration. The current administration has maintained the policy and intensifying it more. They are going to create real serious hardship with Cuba. You know, recently I was there about 4 months ago, and I can tell you that, you know, they are making it very difficult for Cuba to get the proper medical equipment so they can maintain their healthcare system so they can treat their people with the proper healthcare they need. For example, There are a lot of surgeries that the Cuban people need to have, but they can't do these surgeries right now because they don't have the medicines and don't have the necessary equipment to be able to perform them because they have a blockade around Cuba where companies cannot sell and ship supplies and medicine to them. So therefore, many people are going right now who need surgery, but they can't have it, so they're living in pain and suffering. When you also talk about food, they're trying to suffocate Cuba in starvation. They have a very difficult time in terms of their food supply, because it's very difficult for Cuba to trade and get supplies, the food, agriculture food, in and out of Cuba because of this blockade. When you talk about the education system having an impact on Cuba, one of the things they are trying to do is to try to find ways to have their youth to desert Cuba and go to other countries and leave Cuba. Well, you know, when we talk about Cuba, they have invested a lot of money in their citizens. You know, as Corporate America stated about 2 years ago, Cuba is probably the most well-equipped country to be prepared for the 21st century in terms of your businesses, in terms of your technology. Their citizens are well-trained, and other countries trying to use different kind of persuasions to force the people to leave from their home to come to their area where they can use their expertise. So it has increased more hardship on the Cubans. But like always, the Cubans are organized and they are gradually, you know, working through these problems. So at the bare minimum, what we can do at the bare minimum, we can be disciples. Let's go there and just see for yourself and come back and share with the people the real realities. If we ain't got nothing more than their voice, and tell the people. So we can create a climate where we can force the government to react more responsible and get Cuba off the terrorist list, which also hindered their ability to trade. When you come back and you talk to the people to force this government to change this whole blockade policy, it makes no sense. It's another form of warfare that is used against many countries throughout the world. Cuba has been one of the longest ones. So, brothers and sisters, when you invest in Cuba, you're investing in yourself. When you invest in Cuba, you are investing in Africa. Most people don't know this, but Cuba been working on a project very quietly of creating a happy Africa to create an infrastructure, a medical infrastructure throughout the continent where they can develop and train and develop their own doctors, where Africans can take care of themselves health-wise and don't have to depend upon any kind of loans or support from the West. But, you know, in the West, every time you take out a loan, that means you got to get more of yourself up. So these are just some of the many examples in the beauty of Cuba, the beauty of what a socialist revolution look like and feel like. And come on board and join us.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Lee. Thank you. I mean, it's always good to, you know, get greater insight into what's going on and what we can do and need to do. Again, I always stress to people that it's important that we have allies. And, you know, you're not going to find any people that are able to progress or advance politically without allies. It just doesn't happen. And definitely particularly in this day and age. So, again, Brother Lee, give them how they can contact you or reach out to you again.
Yes, you can contact the African Awareness Association by emailing us at AfricanAwarenessAssociation2@gmail.com. You can go to our website, www.aaa-cubatours.com. Or you can just give us a phone call. So you're interested in helping us out or join us by calling 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435. Please help us out. Or you can make your donation to us by Cash Apping. And that's $L, small e, small c, small r, small o, and small b. So thank you all for any support you can give.
All right. Thank you, Brother Lee.
Okay, so family, listen, we're going to get ready to close out. Before we do, just want to ask if there's anyone that has any other announcements or things you'd like to share. Again, we want to thank folks that came out to join us for our Kuumba observance. And again, you know, being in the community, this kind of kicked things off for us. So we're going to start doing more things throughout Philadelphia in communities. Not just here, but in other locations as well, but definitely here in Philly. We're going to be doing some things in Newark, New Jersey very soon, and also Baltimore. Those are on our list coming up for January, February. Those are two of the cities that we'll be doing some things in. But again, we had a great time today. Only a few folks came out, but that's all good, because the ones that did come out, let me tell you, as Baba Ngozi said earlier, they were powerful. And not only powerful, but really, you know, represented in the manner that we're moving forward in. We're not a Black Lives Matter group, y'all. I mean, it's just that simple. We're not here trying to perpetuate people of color and all this other kind of stuff that people are talking about. And again, you know, I'm not trying to say anything against any of that. It's just that that's not what we are about, okay? We work with various groups of people. Of all types, but our focus is our people, first family first, and that is who the majority of our time and energy is going to be placed into. And with that, we're representing the traditions of our people throughout Africa, throughout the diaspora, in the best ways possible. We're looking at quality. We're looking at advancing our art and culture. And as we just heard tonight, we had a very wonderful conversation with Brother Lee and Brother Haki. You know, again, we're talking about advancing our political capabilities and just, you know, we have to rise up. We have to rise up, bring our people forward. They deserve it. Our ancestors are really demanding it right about now. And, you know, some are standing up and making it happen. And, you know, with that said, it's going to happen. So moving right along. Again, we are now in Imani, the last day of Kwanzaa. As people are aware, it's after 12 o'clock now. So it is indeed a new day. And of course, it's also a new year for some. But, you know, the point is, as Brother Lee mentioned earlier, as we just talked about, you know, what's going on in Africa, what's going on here, the bottom line is still the bottom line. What are we going to do? That's what it really comes down to. Brother Lee, what you got going on tomorrow for your program?
Oh, tomorrow I'll be doing a part three of our three-part series, the last part, part three on Cuba, Africa, and liberation. And we're going to have some real interesting discussion on that particular theme, and we invite your listening audience to join us tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock by calling 323-679-0841. That's Africa on the move. So that's what's happening for tomorrow, Sister Empress. Also, if you can, I'd like to add that for folks who also, you know, we wear many hats outside of African Awareness Association. Many people may know me also as an organizer for the All African Peoples Rubber Shirt Party GC. Some of the issues and discussions that you hear from time to time on important shows such as this one, the AAPRPGC also have a perspective on the sole question of dealing with the oppression of our people. We would like to encourage your listening audience to check out that website and give us your comments, your views on what y'all think. Please go to www.aaprp-gc.org. Read it. We just got a new post went up about a week ago. We'll be talking about the importance of supporting Brother Diplomat Ali Saab. Ali Saab is a diplomat who represents Venezuela government and represents Venezuela people. And the U.S. Kidnapped him over a year or so ago. And we want to make sure that, you know, we don't allow this kind of terrorist behavior become norm. And we want to make sure that this brother unfairly been tortured in prison and been incarcerated, and we want them out. So go and check that case out, become familiar with that case, and show your support and solidarity, not only supporting Brother Adetai, but also support the liberation movements that are going on throughout Central and Caribbean and throughout the world, but more important, support your brothers and sisters also out of Venezuela. I mean, they too are a good example of showing people how to resist the so-called European, U.S. imperialist domination of a people who want to be free and be independent. When we talk about Kwanzaa and the principles, they are a good example of that. And, you know, we just not too long ago came from Venezuela, and they have a large African population in Venezuela. Your brothers and sisters are also down there. So we need to organize and unite. And so check out the website, and, you know, let's talk. Let's do this thing together.
All right, Brother Lee. So, family, listen, we're going to get ready to close this session out. Again, thank everyone that came out to join with us for Kaumba, and also to, you know, just begin this process. As Brother Ngozi mentioned earlier, he enjoyed our program tonight so very much, Brother Lee. I don't know if you heard him when he came on earlier. He said that all of the speakers were just powerful. And you know, again, representing in a way that really has to be brought forward, because we got all this other stuff going on, and it is, you know, become like the key thing that folks focus on. Where is, as Bob Marley said, you know, the true revolutionary? Where they at, you know? And particularly in our communities, this is what we're saying. So anyway, you know, we have an answer to some of that. And again, I want to thank those that came out and those that were on Facebook as well. We appreciate your support. We appreciate your love. And, you know, this is a battle. It's no question. This is a battle. We are not, you know, being pimped by the corporations. We are not being pimped by, you know, these various groups and organizations that be talking about how much they like or love black folks, but in reality really don't, you know, for real. But that's a conversation for a whole nother time. Again, our condolences to the Jamal family. And, wow, Brother Lee, I know you know about that by now, you know, that Sister Wadia's going home services was yesterday. Sister Pam did go to visit Lumia.
I wasn't aware of that, Empress. I didn't know about that until today when I tuned into your show. Yeah, sorry to hear that.
My apologies. I thought I sent it to you. Yeah, because I'd sent it out, but yeah. And Pam went to visit Lumia today.
Yeah, I apologize, but we are so overwhelmed trying to do dealing with so many things, and I had some death and stuff with my family. So, but I apologize for not seeing it, but yeah, I'm sad to hear that. But you know, like always, the best thing we can do in terms of her transition is to continue to struggle and carry forward.
No doubt. It's just, you know, it's just kind of, ooh, you know, because when I talked to Sister Pam earlier, I can't go into the details right now, but ooh, it was, you know, just very.
Sister Pam, I love too. I haven't talked to you for a while, Sister Empress.
Yep, I certainly will. I certainly will. But we'll be able to provide a report next week in terms of her visit with Mumia today. And we'll share with you also a song that Mumia wrote. He actually wrote it about 7 years ago. It's called A Love Song for Wadia. And, you know, I'm going to play it next week to just kind of share, you know, some thoughts about it. But he did write a song for her about seven years ago. And so we got it the other day. At any rate, we, you know, again, thank everyone for tuning in. And very soon you're going to hear about our Speakers Bureau. Brother Lee, we have a Speakers Bureau. We'd love to have you and Brother Hakeem be a part of our Speakers Bureau. That's one of our new components that we're bringing forward for 2023, our own Speakers Bureau. We'll do the promotion.
You know, again, you know, for those who want to speak at colleges or churches or conferences or whatever, we'll be, you know, tapping into those things. Again, this is what I was talking about earlier, you know, to examine the possibilities. Go ahead, Brother Lee.
I only would speak on a speaker, participate on a speaker bureau only if you can convince me I got something to say. I'm just a little nobody trying to be somebody, Empress. But
Brother Lee,
a good idea,
give
though.
Me a break. Give me a break. Look, all this information you just shared just tonight, okay, you have views, you have information, you do a radio program, so surely you got something to say. So listen, if we don't do this, who gonna do it?
That's
for
right.
Real.
That's
I mean,
right. It's,
you know, we've
got to
really, who? Yeah, I mean, look, you have a point of view that many don't. And some of that definitely needs to be shared, conveyed, examined. You know, I'm learning sometimes we take things for granted, meaning, you know what we know and we talk to one another. But there's so many people who don't know and do want to know, you know. And so we've got to do better. We got to, you know, this is why we're going in the hood. You know, we're going in the community because what we're realizing is we're talking to each other. Okay. And I mean, that's good.
That's
I love talking to you and Brother Haki. Yes.
Speaking about information, I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen your article on what's that memorandum 46 from the U.S. Security Agency? I sent it to you last week, and another article came on Cool Kill and Pro. I seen you today. Make sure you read the article, and that may be something you want to share with your audience. That's some interesting stuff.
Okay.
But again, reinforcement being told by people. So you know where our people, sometimes when a white boy says something, you know, European says something, they ain't trying to be racist or nothing. But when the European says something, maybe, you know, they have a tendency to gravitate and listen a little more closely. But, you know, check it out. And maybe just
we'll definitely do that. Definitely will do that. But again, I'm drafting you and Brother Haki, you know, if you're interested. I'm just kidding. But no, really, you know, that's one of our moves for this year is to start getting our people really not just giving them more exposure, but making sure that, and particularly students, you know, one of the people that we highlighted tonight or today was Baba Kwame Ture. I mean, we have to look at it, and you all, of course, are doing it, but I'm just saying, you know, people can't keep talking about our ancestors, how great they were, and you know, they did this and they did that. And I'm like, so what work are you doing, you know, not you all, but in general, what work are people doing when they be talking about these ancestors? I don't get it. You know, don't tell me about Harriet Tubman. Don't tell me about, you know, Rosa Parks or you know, this that. Okay, what are you doing that, you know, represents or helps to further or educate our people in that regard? See. It makes no sense.
Tell them when they talk about our ancestors, they talk about themselves. They're just another person like them. So if their ancestors did it, they can do it too. And
that's right.
So we can work with them. We're going to teach them a new dance. You know how people like to dance, you know? We're going to teach them a new dance called Let's Get Organized. That's what we're doing. We're going to teach them how to dance. So that's the new thing that's going on for 2023. We got a new dance called Let's Get Organized. That's what we're going to teach our people since they like to dance. How about that?
Sounds good to me. Look, as long as we're doing something and with that, you, we know that it's moving things forward. I'm down with it. It's all good. So, my brother, I thank you for spending this time with me. I don't know what happened to Brother Herschel tonight. I guess he got caught up in the new year, but it's all good. I know he's doing a lot of work on his projects. But at any rate, family, we thank you all again. We're now moving into the day of Imani, and that's the day of faith, and we are moving forward with faith. But you know, without works and deeds, you can have all the faith in the world, but if you ain't trying to do something with that, then I don't know. All I can say is it's time to move these things forward. And so, you know, again, for those who can, you must. That's just the bottom line. Brother Lee, thank you again. Tell Brother Haki, I'll talk to him again real soon. You know, I love
no
talking
problem.
With y'all, right?
When I write my book, both of y'all will have your chapter in there.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I let people know I got about 2 chapters to go, but I'm writing a couple of books right now, and I think I've already told you about one, The New Philadelphia Negro.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's coming along, I tell you. I just had a female that infiltrated, you know, some of my operations, and she gave me so much good information in terms of the New Philadelphia Negro. Oh, my gosh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. So it's all good. All right, my brother. Listen, we're going to close out. Again, I thank you much. And again, family, you can check out Brother Lee tomorrow, Africa on the Move, 7:00. Blog Talk Radio, just like we are here. And of course, Sister Keisha, she is on every Thursday with the Thorough Black Talk, and they are some serious conversations over there. And by the way, I want to shout out again to Brother Shamari. He came through this evening. Sister Sheila, if you are listening, Brother Shamari is going to be contacting you. He wants to get you on his radio program. He was very impressed with your presentation, and he wants to get you on the radio program soon. Big shout out to all the folks that came out tonight. Sifu Bilal, of course, Brother Lumumba Uncaged, of course, our Brother Yao was in the house. Brother New World Auto is in the house. Mama Diane. And a few other folks came through. So, again, family, we are gearing up to do some stuff, boots on the ground, in the community here in Philly. And, again, we're already scheduled to be in Newark, I think, in January. And then we're heading off to Baltimore. And then at some point we'll be going back to Chicago and Detroit. We're building a movement. This is Brother Lee, before you go, how many years did it take for Baba Kwame to kind of, you know, really bring forward the AAPRP? How many years?
Well, you know, actually the concept or the idea, the creation of AAPRP is the creation of Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, first president of Ghana.
Right.
He wrote a handbook, of welfare, 66, 67. Kwame introduced the AAPRP in 1972 in the United States. It was in 72 when it came into existence outside of Ghana. It was in 72. So he, all his life since 72, that's what he's been working towards. Most people remember him of a few years of being a SNCC and with Black Panther Party, but he spent most of his life trying to build the AAPRP.
Right now.
We are the extension of the AAPRP GC. So. I think that's, you know, that's the best I can give you in terms of right now the answer to your question.
Okay. Well, and the reason why I asked that question is because it kind of, every now and then I have to kind of even remind myself that most movements in particular, but also groups, organizations or whatever, that have a kind of serious and also I'm just going to say pro-Black just to simplify or pro-African. Most that you know, made some headway, it took them a minute to do that. It took them,
more
you know,
than a
while.
It just took them more than a minute.
the progress that you have made in the few years that you've been in existence. That's a lot of progress. You know, you're correct, because what people got to realize, and you know, I can say this to you also just for encouragement, remember, quantity may not give you quality, but quality can give you quantity. So you want to make sure your qualitative work should be your priority. So don't worry about the numbers. Well, you can get a good two or three good men and women, that is excellent. But eventually, if you get the quality, you get the quantity. But with all these things that stacked against us, you know, they got millions of dollars they got in their community of all kind of people to undermine the works that we're doing, all kind of agents they got on the payroll. You won't believe it, the kind of millions of dollars they have in their communities all over the damn country and the world. You won't believe it, the organized institutions, that is just another offspring of them and their interests that you're fighting against. So given all those factors, what achievement do you have achieved? Those are great achievements. You just need to be proud of yourself and just keep going. But remember, like Malcolm said, if they ain't doing anything against you and the shit come too easy, then you know something wrong with that. So if you're having difficulties, that's how it's supposed to be. The stronger the rougher the water, the stronger the swimmer. So you're a strong swimmer and hang in there. So that's life. When you want to be a revolutionary, you want to fight and bring about change. So you can guarantee with two things: either freedom or death.
I say. Well, you know, Brother Lee, I tell you, I'm in it to win it. And so the reality is, again, I had to get acclimated to, you know, just understanding that these things take time. It has taken more time than I had hoped, that's for sure. But, you know, again, once I understood that, then I just dug my heels in.
It takes time, but also it takes resources. A lot of things you're not going to be able to do until you get a certain quantity amount of resources. So,
doing
what you got, you do the best you can and move on. But so.
Well, I think last year I conveyed to you what my next step is in terms of raising. That will be going into effect in February and March. So you'll be hearing more about that very soon. It's going to be kind of shocking to people because, it's so easy and so simple, but at the same time, I don't know anybody that's done it, at least not on this, you know, not from the hood, let's put it that way. But yet, you know, again, it's just, you know, it's right on point. And so I do realize we have to raise the kinds of monies that we need in order to move certain things forward. It's no getting around that. But the other thing that you mentioned too, Brother Lee, and I totally agree, quality is so important. I've had thousands, I've even had millions of people to do, you know, things that I said to do. But when the push come to the shove, you know, it wasn't, shall we say, it wasn't genuine. You know, hype and glitz and all of that kind of stuff is a dime a dozen. To find real brothers and sisters, real black folks that really do want to be free, oh, now that right there is a whole nother ball of wax, as they say. And then when you make the effort to do that, you begin to realize how much that, I mean, I've read and heard Brother Malcolm, you know, many, many times, his speeches or his, you know, interviews or whatever. But having this experience, I understand it now so very differently, and others, of how much you are hated, not just by the off-white man, by your own people. See, same thing with Dr. King. People don't know. They did not like him early on. Among his own people, his own ministers and stuff.
Yeah, but you know, Kwame said about that one, when you love your people, you're going to be the first one to love your people, but they're the first one to smack and spit on you.
Yep.
But you still have to take and keep moving. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, The difference with me, though, Brother Lee, is, and I think I mentioned this to the sister the other day, because we're blessed to have a lot more information and insight into certain things, I now can function kind of, you know, in two different ways, minimally. And so while one part of me is, you know, a very peaceful kind of person, the other part of me is not.
Right.
And so now I'm going to kind of respond in a way that I haven't previously to some things. You know, I kind of just let it go. Because I just thought that was the best thing to do at that time. And what I realized is that when you don't respond to people in a certain kind of way, they see it as a weakness.
Right. I understand.
And so, yeah. So now I can't, you know, I've got to change a few things. But anyway, brother, again, much love to you and the family. Continue to do the work that you're doing. And I appreciate you and Brother Haki much. Oh, I'm still a little upset with you, though. I want you, you know I am, right?
Everything back at you. But I don't know why you're upset with me. You don't want to hear my story, all right? What I told you, committed to you, I'm committed to you. It ain't going nowhere. My word is
yeah, born. I know. But see, that anniversary piece, I'm hurt. I was hurt. I'm going to tell you, I was hurt. See, most people, I don't care. I really don't, you know, because I understand the nature of the game. But some people, it means more to me, you know, in ways that it has nothing to do with the norm. You know what I'm saying? Nothing to do with the norm.
I hear where you're coming from, African. I hear where you're coming from. When I tell you my story, only thing I can do is tell my story. Hope you accept it. If not, all best I can do is chuck out learning experience and not to repeat again. But if you only know the shit I've been going through and trying to deal with, I'm human like everybody else. And I, you know, say I do the best I can. That's why I can say, you don't know me. I'm saying, you know that. That was just after the harm. Essentially, anyway. But anyway, we'll work out. We'll work out, no doubt. No doubt.
All right, my brother. Listen, we're going to get on out of here. I got a little 9-year-old I got to deal with in a few minutes who needs my attention, y'all.
Okay.
So we're going to close this session out. And so, family, listen, we thank you all again. And you're going to be hearing a lot more coming this so-called 2023. We've kind of held out over the past few years on a few things, but now it's time to step this thing up. We really have no choice, but at the same time, it is time. It really is. Our sister said it earlier, as others have said it. The black woman is in a time period right now where we must begin to come forward. I mean, it's just that simple. These young sisters, our daughters, our granddaughters, our nieces, they need to see some real kind of representation. And we asked, Reverend Lee, before you go, we asked earlier, we had a couple of young sisters with us earlier today, and we asked, you know, who do you feel, I'm lost for words. What black woman or young female do you admire? Let's put it that way. And they really couldn't answer that question. I mean, they could have said somebody like a Beyonce or something like that. But in the context that we were asking, they couldn't answer the question. And see, and I've been knowing that for a while, that most young girls from 7 to 17, if you ask them, who do you admire, you know, that's amongst us today, that you feel, you know, is a serious black woman, they can't answer that question. The best you're going to get is Michelle Obama. So see, that's critical. That is very critical. But this is what we're dealing with now. So moving right along, Brother Lee, thank you again. Family, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But there will never be any peace, not really, until there is truly justice. Because you know what we say, Brother Lee, if there's no justice, there's no what?
There's no peace.
There's no peace, y'all. There's no peace. But we're going to find some peace. Yes, we are, because we're going to get some justice. And note, irreversible. That's, now, there it is, irreversible. Because these people give you a little bit of justice, then they'll take it right back. So this has got to be irreversible justice. All right, Brother Lee, talk to you later. Peace out, y'all.
All right. Forward.